Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Cardano Citizen. I hope you've had a good week since our last episode. And, oh wait, that's just in. Elon Musk just tweeted bad things about Bitcoin, and now life is no longer worth living. Elon Musk? Is that the guy from the Johnny Depp divorce? Hey, yo, today on the show, we have René Metla. René hails from Switzerland, where they pronounce things differently than they are written. And also, he works as a mechanical engineer. René is another in our series of Cardano community advisors and proposal mentors. In this sit-down, we talk mostly about governance, what some of the initial directives and models could be implemented to gather a cohesive vision as we launch into the Voltaire era. And don't worry if all that type of thing bores you to the point that you're going to take all four of the vaccines at once just in the hopes of feeling anything again. If you wait till the very end, René has a special, super secret insider's tip on how to make a literal ton of money on Doge virtually overnight. And when I say ton, I mean a metric ton, because René is from Switzerland. So stay tuned to the end for that. Here's René. Hello, René. Welcome to the show. And how are you doing?
Thank you for having me, Dallas. Doing very fine. A little bit more relaxed lately.
Where? And I believe, is it you live in Switzerland?
I live in Switzerland, yeah. Born and grown in Switzerland.
Born and grown in Switzerland. You know, we don't know each other, but every time someone asked me, what's your dream place you want to live? I used to say New Zealand, and then I changed my mind and I said Switzerland, because every place in Switzerland, as far as I know, looks like a postcard. Like, there's this place called Interlaken.
Oh, I mean, that's the postcard. That's the postcard location.
So not all of Switzerland looks like Interlaken?
No. I have point you on that. It doesn't look like... I mean, Interlaken is, you know, it's a perfect blend because you have a city that is at the lake and directly beneath mountains. So you have like everything that you want in one picture.
Yeah, two giant lakes, mountains,
yeah.
Switzerland. Yeah. When I first saw it, I couldn't believe that place existed. I thought it looked like a Disney movie. So... what do you do for a living out there in Switzerland?
I'm a mechanical engineer, but not what most mechanical engineers do. I kind of ended up specializing into doing cost assumptions for parts that you want to buy or put into your product. So I'm like an internal consultant in the company that says that's going to be too expensive. Or
yeah.
If you change this, it's going to get cheaper.
Interesting. So I guess with that, a little bit of a business background, because as far as I know, you were recommended for an interview by Phil Kay. He said You were right in there like a dirty shirt in all of Project Catalyst, and in a good way. So on top of being a community advisor, are you also... acting as a proposal mentor?
I do pick up some proposal mentor things. I actually ended up presenting that in the town hall. There was like a group when we did a retrospect that Mike hosted. We ended up with the idea that, you know, why don't we just come up with the idea to... why don't we just have some of the veterans or CAs that are engaged in the community help out the proposals early on as a voluntary thing? I can't just present it and then not do it myself. Also, I like doing it. But
yeah,
not that many.
No, and they really have to reach out to you in order to be in a proposal mentor relationship. You know what I mean? Like, so it's not like it's just someone submits a thing and then a proposal mentor comes along, is it?
No, it's not like we're not attracted like flies. You actually have to go into Discord and hit that add proposal mentor, and then maybe someone shows up, maybe not. I think it really depends if how busy the space is.
It seems like you might be a good choice to do some of that because of your background in real life with cost analysis and stuff like that.
I think it helps a lot being in that the company that I work for at the moment is international, big corporate, really. And I think I learned a lot from, you know, what is going on in the company, how they approach things, which mm-hmm. is not always to my liking, but there's, you know, some methodologies on how you present things.
Interesting.
That you can take away with, you know, like how do you approach a business plan.
And also, you've been a community advisor since Fund 2, I believe.
Yep, that's correct.
And so are you one of the ones in there? The last I heard, the community advisors were all kind of overworked and swamped a little bit with, you know, 20% of the CAs doing 80% of the work. I suppose you're one of those 20% of CAs.
Oh, no, not at all.
Oh, really? You're one of the 80% of CAs?
I'm one of the 80%. I think in Fund 2, I managed to assess like 5 proposals.
Hmm.
I didn't get rewards, which was absolutely fine for me.
That's in Fund 2, but the reward system was it as robust as it is now? Or I believe it's more manual.
It's the same as it is now. So if you give an assessment, the proposal is basically like buying a lottery ticket.
Okay.
And for every proposal, 3 assessments get rewarded randomly.
Oh. So if there's 5, you have a 2 out of 5 chance of not getting it.
No, actually. Because I put proposals on assessments on 5 proposals, I kind of had 5 lottery tickets, but then the chances of winning there depends on how many assessments that proposal got.
Yeah, so okay, that's it. So if a proposal had 30 assessments,
yeah,
you have a 1 in 30 chance or whatever.
Exactly.
Or I guess,
and if
you'd
only had 3, I would have a 100% chance to getting rewarded.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah, is that? I guess that just motivates people to go assess a different proposal.
Yep. That's the point. That's so, why they put it like this, to get at least 3 assessments for every proposal.
Yeah. I guess I like that. I wouldn't. It seems like if you do an assessment, a good assessment, you should get rewarded. But on the same hand, there's no reason to just keep assessing the same one over and over again.
Yep.
All right. So what? I know you got into Cardano around 2017.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been into crypto, and how did that journey start?
I don't know. That's like, it's basically the story of most, I guess. You know, there's the hype. You get notion of the hype. I actually learned about it a few years before that. When I was studying, there was, I guess it was like 2 years before 2017, so around 2014, 2015, we had that economics teacher talking shit about Bitcoin, you know, like it's just a virtual currency, doesn't really have value. But he kind of had that critical point of view towards it, like we'd have to really explain why it has value, but in a way he could also see that it could do something that is needed. But he wasn't convinced. But that's like the first time I heard of it. But then I was a poor student, so I didn't buy anything. I actually considered it and like, no, I can't spare anything, so nope.
Yeah, I didn't get in the early days either. I had a friend who got in around $100, but he just quadrupled his money and got back out.
Yeah, I think the same would have happened to me, and the way it happened to me that I actually got in is, you know, the 2017 hype started, so end of summer, kind of. I started taking notion of it because media.
It was exploding in that first bull run.
Absolutely. I'm a very curious mind, and that's just like something that would interest me. So I started reading into it. I'm like, okay, Bitcoin kind of pushed me off because of the... there were already the first notions that there was quite a centralization towards China with all the ASICs.
Mm.
Then the power consumption, it's just... I felt the idea of having a decentralized system, but I got the feeling that this is already kind of, semi-sunk ship, kind of. It's still driving, but to me, it didn't really convince me. So it's, and also it was already really high. And my idea was like, hey, if I find something that does Bitcoin better than Bitcoin that is really cheap at the moment, I can make a buck. And I got in because I was happy to make money, of course.
Yeah. Everyone knows that they're purchasing a risky instrument, right? So you have to have the idea that maybe you can make a little bit of money.
Yeah, I'm actually happy I never put money that I could not lose. So.
Yeah, I've never either. I'm not greedy. I'm just like, look, because I don't know if I'll make a mistake, right? Not only in trading, but some kind of weird keystroke mistake and just send my crypto into the multiverse. And it just ends up.
I'm not the only one who has that deep nested fear that every time you send it somewhere, like, oh, it's going to be gone. It's not going to show up on the other side.
Yeah, right. So it's like, if I'm going to make a keystroke mistake, I'd rather make a $1,000 mistake than a $15,000 mistake, you know? Yeah. And, you know, if people got in early, good for them. I myself am not a day trader or anything like that, but anything that I've looked into about trading, you know, involves trading around trading plans and having an entry and exit strategy. And I don't know anybody whose entry or whose exit strategy at entry of a brand new risky instrument is let me buy this for a dollar and exit when it's at 60,000. You know what I mean? Like, it literally doesn't exist. It's like, let me exit when it's at $3, right? So,
I mean, you could build something where you go, you know, like once it doubles, I sell half of it. And then always when it doubles, I sell half. So you always get the same amount, but you still have something left in. But then that's not how you maximize. That's already a risk minimizing strategy.
Yeah.
But it's just too stressful, isn't it?
Oh, and you're watching. I mean, I still check the charts every day just out of curiosity. I have no plans to. I have no plans to buy anything until, like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not even sure I'll buy anything before the next Gogan fork. You know what I mean? Even though it's pulling back nowadays, but I get more involved on this side, on Project Catalyst side. You know.
That actually helped me a lot to get my brains out of looking at charts and, you know, also Reddit didn't help much when it got more crowded and people started talking price expectations more. Like,
I feel the subreddit is a little bit, it's not only talking price expectations all the time with the boom and the GameStop saga and the sort of meme culture exploding out of Wall Street Bets, but, it's also like every little post I see on there is in some way connected with speculation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, even if it doesn't say, hey, what do you guys think the price is going to? It's something like, oh, I wish Charles wouldn't do this. You know, the implication being because Charles does such and such a thing,
and
there's
the
a risk
price.
Of the price goes down or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's like, exactly. That's it's always something.
It started stressing me out, and I only really realized it when I started to, you know, I just didn't have the time anymore to spend that much time on Reddit, and because I would spend it on Discord, reading through what's going on in Catalyst.
Yeah.
That was good for my mental health.
Yeah, certainly. And I don't really like the Reddit that much either. But I mean, it's also the first place people look. It's a decent place to ask, the first questions people might have. It seems certainly that the Discord has it's even better than Telegram in terms of getting specifically shown around and yep. shown where you can help and stuff like that, and participating in conversations that involve really the direct creators of the culture that's going around Cardano, and the community hub is there as far as I'm concerned.
That's the one that I care about, the one in Discord.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't spend much time on Telegram.
It's a subgroup of the community that is aware of Catalyst and engaged in Catalyst. But, I mean, Reddit is still nice to know, to scroll through and see news that I would miss otherwise. But that's about it. It's reading headlines and checking what could interest me.
So, where do you see... because I've been asking people lately and having a few discussions on the Discord more about the future governance and this type of thing of how Voltaire could be rolled out.
Oh, that's a crystal ball question.
It is. It's like the granddad of all questions.
Yeah. I don't have a clear vision of that at all. I'm more like the reverse type of... My strength is doing the reverse. You know, I look at something and try to figure out how could that break.
Hmm. Something has to already exist, though.
Yes.
Well, what exists now that you've seen might have some weaknesses in it in terms of, like, say... The catalyst. Yeah, no, there are. So let's talk about some of those. And then maybe we'll end a little bit on Voltaire's and visions of the future and stuff like
yes,
that.
Yes, of course.
So, because obviously the catalyst process in a linear fashion is kind of this wonky, janky Rube Goldberg machine of wheels and knobs and turning, spinning things and stuff like that. And certainly not automated in any sense. So where have you seen, say, the low-hanging fruit in that process that might be addressable?
The question is where do you start? With the proposals, I mean, there's some that have been spoken about before. Or addressed in Discord a lot, and that's not, by all means not my idea, but there's this tendency that proposals go their own route. You know, I have an idea. I think I can start putting up the solution. I'm going to ask for funds for that. That's what the swamp guys are after, right? How can you bring those people together that have like almost identical ideas and have them work together, and then, you know, the funds are more efficiently used. It's way easier to work in a team than alone, unless you have a difficult character. But
yeah,
then you probably won't be successful. It's just everything gets better when you share your knowledge and.
Essentially, you'll have what you're saying is you have six proposals. They're all basically the same proposal by six different people.
Yeah, and they might disagree on certain things, like do we go open source or do we want to make it proprietary, or I don't know, do we start the pilot in the US or in Europe or whatever.
Yeah,
but those are, you know, details. You can still build the product and say, okay, maybe make part of it proprietary, and the other, or you just talk it out and figure out we actually have the same values, and maybe I thought I want something, but that's not actually important to me.
Yeah, interesting. I wonder, because just thinking about it, the way you describe it, and I've seen a little bit of it, but I'm not functioning as a community advisor, right? Putting my own time into this type of thing.
Yeah.
But it seems on the surface, my first thoughts is, you know, okay, well, but the competition between six somewhat identical proposals is a good thing in that technically the strongest one should get the most votes and be the one that's awarded versus the other five, right? But it's also an interesting idea that possibly ahead of time when there's that much competition, there could be some consolidation first. But I don't know. I can see arguments for both sides, because I know for myself, I would be like, well, I know better. I'm already having disagreements about the start of Voltaire and the type of approach that maybe should be taken, right?
Yeah.
Just my own self thinking like, okay, so like, how do we guide ourselves with principles in a decentralized way versus other people want to start with the decision-making apparatus right away? And I'm like, well, okay, so how to make decisions is one thing. What about why? What do we let influence our decisions? Right. So, you know what I mean? Just the conversations like that end up being disagreeable in nature in terms of, so yeah, I'm not sure how to.
Yeah. I mean, you won't be able to consolidate all the things that go in a similar direction into one thing. And that's fine too. It's just, you know, there's probably, a more efficient balance where it could land.
Has anybody come up with any sort of brainstorming conversations that you've seen around some way to consolidate a few of those loose strands?
I've seen attempts. I'm actually not too deep into this, but I see it as one of the low-hanging fruits, and I think what has tried to be done is that you can tag your proposal with those tags.
Oh.
So that you could be found by others. I don't know if that gets used, right? Tool is,
I know it gets used by, yeah, I know it gets used by the admins and the community advisors, right? But I think proposers, in a sense, also like come from outside of the system. Right. And then they jump into the system to get mentorship or reviews and campaign for votes. There's not a lot of, I see not a lot of platform for campaigning of votes, which is unfortunate. Like, you know, like in a sense, I'm setting myself up to do a little bit of that, but I also only have probably about six episodes, not even six episodes a month, if I was hustling worth of time and effort. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's more like one a week.
Yep.
And I'm not really setting myself up to be that Jimmy Fallon type that just has someone come plug their thing and then someone come plug their thing and then someone come plug their thing. But it's unfortunate that that doesn't exist either, because there's no, like I said, there's no platform for proposers to come say, other than hanging out on Discord. But that's just so, I don't know, voluntary?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think
what else?
It no, needs go ahead. To evolve. But I, as I said, I'm not that deep into this.
What other weak points have you noticed?
Oh, weak points?
Weak points or things that people are addressing. I know there's been an argument recently about, I don't know, I haven't paid much attention to it, but there was an argument about maybe
the recourse?
Yeah, feedback that wasn't clear or something like that from one proposal, and then I don't know, it was too much influence from the proposal. The guys, do you know the one I'm referring to?
Yes, I know the story. I can go a little bit into that if you want.
Sure. Because I have a brief skeleton of it, but I wasn't ready to really dive deep into it and get into the argument.
The way the system at the moment works is that you put up a proposal. And starting next Wednesday at the time of this recording, the assessment stage starts.
Yeah.
Where, anyone actually can register into Ideascale and be a community advisor. They have to register until Wednesday though. But there's like no limitations who can be it. And I consider that a very good point, you know, that we keep the gates wide open. And make it as inclusive as possible, because to me, that's one of the core values that attracts me to Cardano, that like everyone is equal.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be academic degree to be eligible to do something. You just need to bring in the passion, and maybe at some point you need some skill, of course, but generally everyone is admissible. Mm-hmm. Then they go out and write assessments for proposals. In 2/3 of the cases, that's actually not even done. I think it's still about 2/3. In Fund 3, it was 2/3 of the assessments were committed empty. You have to give a rating for three categories, and you have to give a reason why you gave that certain rating. Because otherwise you could just go and spam ratings out, right? You can get money by this, and if you don't have to reason about it, no one knows if you actually mean it or if it's just tried to get your assessments out. So the reasoning is actually more important than the rating in that kind of way. But mm-hmm. the rating is then what shows up on the ballot.
So the argument was that the rating shows up, the rating was good, but the reason was bad or something to that effect?
Yes, that's then where the quality assurance stage comes in. Fund 2 ran without it. I don't know how the decision actually happened. I kind of missed that point. But then in Fund 3, the quality assurance was that people who were eligible in Fund 2 as community advisors would be veterans in Fund 3. And they would make sure that the quality of the assessments is good. In Fund 3, that meant that if you find bad quality review, you can flag them as not okay. And then the community advisors and all his proposals would get the community advisors and all his assessments would get pulled out of the ballot. So he would lose all the work of this fund. And the problem was they put a lot of emotional stress on the veterans. It was certainly for me, because you had to decide, is this single assessment bad enough or hurtful to the system enough to kick out an entire player? And that might be, 20, 100 assessments done, and maybe only one was bad. So you'd go cross-reference and see, is that a generally bad quality performer, or is that just is it a slip? And that was a lot of work and a lot of stress. And so for the Fund 4, the improvement was that we have that red and yellow card system that Rodrigo Baccini, I hope I pronounced it correctly.
Yeah, I think so.
Came up with. That then was, a lot of people worked on it and brought in their ideas how we can improve what we saw in Fund 3, which was very stressful. And the idea was that you have, like in soccer, you have a yellow card, which is a slap on the wrist. And you have red cards, which is you put the player out of the game. So the red card would be the same as in Fund 2, but then you have a lot of yellow card criteria, so like, that's not good, but it's also not enough to kick you out.
Mm-hmm.
And we came up with criteria. Yeah.
Is there a function to just say accumulate? Like, oh, but you got 7 yellow cards. Maybe you do suck. You need training or something to that effect. You know what I mean? Or is it just sort of.
That was the intention.
Okay.
Very close to soccer with this too, right? If you have 2 yellow cards in the same game, you get kicked out.
Yeah, see, we don't know. I'm from across the ocean. Yeah. That doesn't exist over here.
I'm actually.
Can you make it the same as hockey? You're in Switzerland. You might know hockey. No, yeah, I'm just playing. No, I get it. Yeah, red card, yellow card. It seemed like a good idea.
Yes.
I believe it's still functioning, right?
Yes. But what we didn't do is that the conversion from yellow cards into red cards. It was discussed, and we actually already had the idea to, you know, if you have 10 or 20% yellow cards, it converts into a red card and you get completely kicked out.
Hmm.
But then we decided we want to be, you know, small steps. And the conversion seemed to be a quite big step that could lead to unwanted outcomes. Like, what if you have very critical veterans that then kick out one of those community advisors that put in 100 assessments, 90 of them were good, 10 were bad, and you kick them out because of the 10, and the ecosystem loses those 90.
And the percentage was still pretty good. It's only at 10%.
Yeah, I mean, that's undebatable, again, right? Is 10% good or bad? It depends on how harsh we critique.
But he still had 90 good ones. Yeah, it is kind of...
Yeah, it's a difficult topic. So we didn't do that back then. I think it's planned for now that we have the conversion because we saw that the people that got a lot of yellow cards, they are consistently underperforming in the quality. So they're committed...
There is a type of profile that, almost.
Yeah.
In terms of the people who do yellow cards are the type that they're just going to kind of keep producing them.
Yeah. And you have the outliers that have, you know, just maybe one criteria being yellow flagged because, I don't know, they had a bad time when writing it. I think Ken Adams said he caught one because he thought it's a joke, like a test proposal to see if it gets rated badly. And he didn't put the effort to put a good statement, and that yielded him a yellow card. And that's absolutely fine.
Hmm. Could you put, if you were assessing a thing, and because I know Ken Adams, I'm literally editing his audio right now. Before I recorded this show, I would just finish the intro. And could you write in your description or whatever of why you gave your rating, could you write, oh, I thought this proposal was a joke proposal, so I gave it a rating of this.
Yeah.
And that would prevent you from getting a yellow because it explains.
Yes.
That you, it seems like a joke to you.
I mean, you should still put a little bit more detail to be sure that it's not getting flagged, but I guess that would already be an acceptable opinion. We're actually tightening the screws now with the criteria that we that we have in the red yellow card system, because before it was actually kind of hard to get flagged, which was what then led to the argument in Discord, because the consensus among the veterans was that we have those guidelines set up in the document and we assess by those guidelines. Mm. Of course, it's subjective interpretation, but we stick to the criteria defined in there. And if you have something that doesn't meet the criteria, you can give it an other offense. But then it's kind of, you know, even more subjective. And it's less likely that you reach a threshold, because to actually remove an assessment with a red flag or a yellow flag, at least 4 veterans have to assess it or review it. If it's fine.
Oh,
and give their opinion.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
And you have to have a majority on that certain criteria. So
there has to be an agreement to remove an assessment.
Yes, and you have to have the agreement not just that it's a yellow card, you have to have the agreement that it's this specific criterion.
Is why it has a yellow card.
Why you want to remove it. For example, I think one criterion was that the assessment is referring to the wrong challenge. Like you give an assessment to a DAP proposal, but you assess it as if it was in the ecosystem, developer ecosystem. And then you can remove that because they did something wrong, right? They probably didn't read properly. They were mistaken.
Yeah.
And you don't need to assume that there's malicious intent, right? It actually doesn't matter. That the role of the community advisors and the veterans is to keep the value for the community high, for the voters high.
Hey guys, welcome to the mid-roll ad. Today's show was brought to you by that guy on your Facebook that explains conspiracy theories or rants about society from inside his car. I get it. I don't want people to see how I live either. Okay, back to the show. So a thought comes to me while I'm listening to this and the trajectory you guys have taken as community advisors. How supportive would you say IOHK or IOG or whatever has been in terms of helping you guys to roll these ideas out? It seems like they're doing well in terms of communication, but I don't know how much role they're playing in the development of the protocols or anything like that.
I mean, they don't step in and do the development for us.
So do you end up discussing with idea scale or anything like that? Or is it everyone agrees to use the yellow card and red card system? Yeah. Thing.
We brought it up with Dahl, and he liked the approach. He actually had it presented in Town Hall 2. And luckily enough, we had Lucio, who stepped up and created the scripts for it, so that we can actually automate all those steps in the quality assurance stage to run smoothly, or at least as smooth as possible. Because it was another problem in Fund 3, it was all manual.
Yeah.
And you make the system more complex. At some point, you need scripts to automate that stuff.
Especially as this thing scales.
Yeah.
People are already getting overloaded a little bit.
So that was a community effort, actually. Most of the things. Then we just interfaced with Marek, who is the responsible employee from IOG for idea scale data stuff.
Oh, okay.
So that went actually very smoothly, as far as I can tell. I guess Lucio could tell you more about that, because he wasn't directly involved with the aftermath of making sure that everything went fine. He also knew how the scripts work. I tried to understand it. I didn't. I helped him, or I helped in that kind of way that I made sure that what was written in the document of how it should work. I made a process flow out of it, so it's easier to understand there what happens. And then he wrote the scripts, and it went pretty well, as far as I can tell.
So what do you think? Another question or challenge that comes to mind as we're talking is everything I've seen has been done in English with a little bit of, I think I've seen some proposal for Latin support. And yet, obviously, Cardano is intended to be multinational and is multinational, but how about, are you aware of any efforts to, you could almost say decentralize the languages in terms of, everything's in English? That kind of already starts to limit a bunch of people.
It keeps a lot of people out for sure, yeah. I've seen discussions. I haven't seen scalable solutions yet. But I guess that's also really hard to do. I mean, that opens such a... Again, what happens to me is, right, I see some kind of idea. I start to think about what could go wrong with that. If you talk about, let's take it out of English, and someone says, I want to, start translating stuff into German, how do you ensure that it's the same thing?
Yeah.
Or that the meaning is
not captured lost.
Well. Yeah. And how do you deal with delay?
Oh, interesting. I never thought about the delay of translation.
Yeah. And I mean, for English to German, I think the auto translators are very in a very good shape at the moment. So yeah, that would probably not be the biggest problem. But what if you don't have a very well trained translator algorithm from English to an arbitrary language, then yeah, you lose the community, or you have the risk that there's manipulation. And how do you deal with that? You probably have to have it translated from multiple people and cross-referenced.
And then it becomes this slow. huge undertaking.
Yeah, it becomes very expensive and very slow. And I would be very excited to see solutions in that direction. I guess it could. If you have a really good idea how to solve that for multiple languages, probably one of the most desired proposals out there.
Yeah, so if somebody's listening and knows, would have an idea for me, I mean, if somebody had an AI solution, is the only thing that I could think of that's efficient in terms of effort.
Yep.
Right? Some type of bot. Reads over proposals, like at least to the point where different tongues could read proposals and therefore vote. Like maybe not, you know, assessments in Spanish, proposals in Dutch. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that would be amazing.
Maybe, and that would be cool. But the ecosystem just doesn't exist to support a lot of that. But, you know, if like, let's say I had a proposal to, I don't know, make a calculator app and that was my proposal. If there was some sort of thing built into IdeaScale or that supported into IdeaScale somehow where I hit this translate button. That's the IdeaScale translate button, and it translates it into French, Spanish, Italian. I mean, realistically, you could just have your proposal as you write it. And I think the way things work, you could have a Google API or something like that. That's just sort of, do the Google version of this. And then it may not be greatly accurate, but it at least makes my proposal accessible to someone who speaks French only.
Yep. I mean, but there's Google out there, I think. Does Facebook have a translation engine? Not sure.
I'm assuming one of them's somewhat open source or available for cheap or something
like that. Freemium provider, which is DeepL. They obviously use deep learning algorithms to have their translation up, and they provide similar services Google with the translation. I guess if you have a lot of translation, you have to pay for it. But the problem that you then have is now I'm hinging on one or two centralized solutions.
Yeah, but on the same hand, if you think about it, IdeaScale is pretty centralized.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how they're planning on getting away from that, but it's not so much the centralization to me that sometimes is such a problem. It's the transparency and accountability, right? Like we say, that's a bit of a qualm I have with, because everyone uses the word decentralization. It becomes this marketing word, right? Where it just means decentralization equals good. And it's like, well, there's different levels of decentralization. And, you know, some levels of, say, nodules of power or influence aren't that bad as long as they're accountable and transparent. It's the accountability and transparency that we don't have that pisses us all off. For example, apparently, you know, the stake pools are all decentralized. Why? Because IOHK doesn't mint blocks. Mm-hmm. Okay. But as far as I understand, the way that the minting works, it's only like 20% of the pools that are large enough to get the opportunity to mint a block.
Yeah, right.
So all the little guys, all the other 1,500 pools out there that have less than 250,000 or whatever it is, right? They don't mint a damn thing. And yet these other 30 pools that have 450 million apiece in them, they mint everything. So is that truly decentralized? You know what I mean? It's just this marketing buzzword, in my opinion, that gets thrown around and it means good. It's not really equal.
Yeah, I mean, the mistake that is done is you look at the latest reports and oh, we have 2,500 pools. That's
yeah,
not
six
good
of
number.
Them make all the, six of them make all the blocks.
Yeah, well, that's not quite the case for Cardano Lucky.
No,
we're fairly decentralized actually, but yeah, it's not the 2,500. That's the potential. That's not the achieved one. I think. I checked Reddit today and there's someone who puts a breakdown. I think 500 of those 2,500 are not even capable of minting blocks because either they lack pledge or they don't even have ADA in it at all.
Hmm.
So, yeah, you'd have to go and say, okay, how well distributed is it? I remember from economics class, there's this... this chart where you display what percentage of the population has how much money.
Yeah.
I think that's... I forgot what the chart is, but you measure the Gini index with it, I think that is. It gives you good feedback about how equal a society is, and Cardano is kind of a society, so you could do that for pools, and they do tell you way more.
No, certainly. And it's just one example I have of, because the decentralization argument is one I'm coming up. And this kind of transitions us into Voltaire a little bit, because I've been campaigning quietly a little bit that the foundations of Voltaire should probably be based on a type of agreed upon document and agreed upon vision. You know, in the past, these types of things have been the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, right? And then right away, that puts spines up on people's backs a little bit, because like, oh, well, that's government. That's the U.S. government, and they're bad. And you know what I mean? And I, you know, I hate them too. But it's people miss the idea, like, yo, the U.S. government is radically decentralized. It might be operating in a currently operating in a very corrupt and goofy way, and then also the military's kind of taken over all the money, you know, so they actually seem to run everything because they get all the money. But prior to that, at its foundations, it was radically decentralized. And on paper, it's radically decentralized. It's the lack of transparency and accountability that F's everything up. And you're allowed to swear on this show, but
yeah,
you know what I mean? It's that lack of accountability. So, but like a decentralized Congress with committees and a Senate oversight committees and this type of thing, radically, radically different than the monarchy they split from. Right.
Yes,
and
it's
on paper,
lack of
brilliant.
Transparency, right? In a lot of ways. I mean, the Swiss government works quite similar to the American one. I think it's,
yeah, you guys have a president, don't you?
No, we don't have a president.
Is it a prime minister?
We have a council of seven ministers.
A council of seven ministers? Is there a head? Is there a head guy? Like, I'm in Canada, we have prime minister, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But he's also
head
like
guy that changes, I think, every year, but it's a representative role. So, what happens in Switzerland is you have those seven ministers. They talk behind closed doors about what they want to decide and stuff they want to do. And you have a majority because it's not even number. And the idea is that they represent as one. So you have seven heads, but one voice.
Interesting. And also foundational documents. right? There must be a Swiss constitution.
Yes, and I think what I see that people would get anxious about when they hear it is when you start putting in rules, you know. Rules are always something that you can walk around. It's like putting up walls, right? You build bigger ladders.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can see that. But on the same hand, I wonder if there's a little bit of personal bias in that, in the sense that, like, well, you have rules right now for the yellow card, red card. You know what I mean?
Yes. If it's like, you know, as few as possible, right? We don't have a strict rule. If it has less than, I don't know, that many characters, remove it. It's most of the things are captured in guidelines, and then just how we execute them is in a rule set.
Yeah. No, and that's just it. I'm coming up against resistance in the idea, and I don't fully know how that such an idea would be implemented. It just seems natural to me that the beginning of governance in every case that it's ever happened ever has always started with foundational documents.
Yes.
Failed with foundational documents. You know what I mean? Like, we the people believe that no one is equal and everything is bullshit. And then, and then that one didn't succeed for some reason. You know what I mean? Like,
yes. But a lot of the context of those foundational documents that are so important, and I think that Cardano at the moment is missing, are values. You see that quite frequently when you go into read into proposals or when you go on Reddit and you see newcomers come in. They often say, I align with the values of Cardano.
Hmm.
That's
not really a... What I mean, it is sort of a thing, but yeah, it's really just our interpretation of something that we feel Charles believes, which is fine, but it's subjective.
If you think about it, it makes sense that Charles' values are the values of Cardano because he kickstarted the damn thing.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And he modeled it after his own values. It makes absolute sense that the system that he's building is modeled after his own values and most likely carries almost 100% his values in it. The thing that I'm missing is we should put that down. What does that mean? What are the values of Cardano? So that when Charles isn't as dominant anymore, which he wants to at some point step back, right? And get more in the background. How do we make sure that we don't lose those? How do we make sure that we don't go from, we want to make sure that people have equal access to basic infrastructure in a digital, financial sense to, we want to maximize the stake rewards for the top 5%.
Yeah, or how do we prevent, you know, an insurgency of let's burn some tokens or something to that. You know what I mean?
And if you know what your values are, you can say, hey, that is in line with it or that is not in line with it. And you can discuss about that and you can say, that's not fine with us, right? We have human rights where the value is that people are equal. And that allows you to decide that just because someone has a different hair color, you can't just slaughter them.
Yeah.
That's a value. That's not a rule. But you
can
take decisions with that.
Yeah, and I think a document of values or something to that effect could be agreed upon, voted upon, and therefore not chiseled into stone like a law, but or into the code in this case, I guess, where the code is law, but. It would be visible to everyone, like, hey, everyone that voted on this document of values, the spread, the bell curve shows that 98% of people agreed with this much ADA that this was a huge value of theirs. And this other one over here about minting NFTs to buy Starbucks wasn't as a huge of a value.
Right? I mean, that would be an action, right? Buying Starbucks is an action.
Well, yeah, somebody's going to think it's a value. I want to be able to, I want to have that intergalactic currency myself. No one's made space cash yet, right? And I'm like, well, how do I buy a spaceship? When the spaceship lands, I don't want to do science with aliens. I want to buy a sweet UFO off them.
Yeah.
Right.
What I meant with, maybe I can make an example. And that's, again, it's, I didn't come up with that. There's a guy out there, Simon Sinek. You might have heard of him, but if you don't know him yet, I
start with why.
Start with why, exactly. And
I'll put him in the show notes. Hold on, I'm making a note.
Perfect.
Go ahead.
I'm not sponsored.
No, no, you know, someday I'm going to chase him down to have on the show, honestly, but I'll probably need a bigger audience because he's kind of a big time guy.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
That's so basically just for the listeners, or for you on to make sure that we understand each other. He has a very simple framework where he says every person in this world has a core motivation that gets them out of bed in the morning. And if they are in line with that core motivation or that value, things are easy to them. It's easy to put a lot of work behind it because it creates fulfillment for you. To make an example, mine is to provide meaningful contributions so that others are enabled to work at their best.
Interesting.
Which fits quite well with my work as a community advisor, as a proposal mentor, and as a veteran, because all those things, what I do is I give feedback, I make a contribution, and it increases the value of something other people do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm so happy to work in Catalyst and put a lot of my free time in it. It makes a lot of sense.
No, certainly. And I know the work of, from what I've seen of Simon Sinek, there's the two things that I'm aware of his the most is his adaptation of infinite games versus finite games. Mm-hmm. And then his more famous start with why speech. And that is another reason that's motivated me to kind of talk about foundational documents and stuff like that and foundational agreements that are voted on is because, you know, starting with why,
yes,
you know, rather than how or, hey, we got to get all the cogs and whistles and bells in place.
That's all what's right.
It's like you say, we don't really have a definitive agreement on even what the values of Cardano are. We just sort of have our own subjective experience of what we think Charles means.
And I think that's a quite low hanging fruit because if you just spend I could probably go sit down, listen to a few hours of Charles's AMAs.
Yeah.
I could sketch up his why, and that would probably be Cardano's why too, and his values.
Yeah.
Maybe I should do that.
Well, you know what? Honestly,
the difficulty would be, right? At the moment, the system doesn't really it doesn't easily allow that I can. Maybe I should just give it a shot, though. I have one in Fund 6 then. So I could sketch it up, and I mean, I don't need money for that. I just want it to be voted on so that it gets that legitimacy that it needs to be recognized by the ecosystem.
You know, that's exactly my thoughts in the sense of I was waiting for Catalyst to, because we're not in 100% control of the different, I call them categories, that come down for Catalyst. You know what I mean? It's all about DApp and it's all about DApps and onboarding and ecosystem and blah, 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 right? I was waiting until there was one of those categories in there that made sense to start having this discussion in a way of drafting a proposal.
Yep.
I'm not paying super close attention yet. I'm assuming it's a couple funds away probably before this starts to leak into the ears of IOHK and them. But yeah, once that comes down, my intention was to figure out some kind of proposal. And just from even our conversation today, like, because I have a bit of a branding and marketing brain mm-hmm. from just I have side business in real life selling on Amazon for the last couple of years and stuff mm-hmm. like that, right? So I'm always kind of doing that thing, and I just can picture a proposal from Renee called the Cardano Council of Seven. Because to me, that's, you know, where you go and find seven people and a year later, they're all fired or whatever and everything's accountable. And instead of behind closed doors, it's all in open doors or something like that.
Yeah.
And their entire job of these seven people is to draft seven votable proposals or six votable proposals or one or four or nine or 12 votable proposals throughout the next calendar year. In terms of governance and establishing the multi-decade structure of values of Cardano or something to that effect,
that's
right?
That's a really interesting way to think. See, I never yeah. thought of that.
This is what I'm trying to say, and people are arguing with me and stuff like that in Discord, and I'm like, no, man.
No, that's actually... I've never looked at it from that perspective, right? I always thought, okay, what could
get
I do, right? I could draft a proposal, ask for 5 ADA, maybe put it into proposal.
You could ask for, yeah, you could ask for a bunch of ADA,
right? I can bend it into that shape that it fits there, and have it voted in. And when enough people vote for that value, you kind of say, the community has spoken. Your idea is so much more efficient that you say we create a small cohort of people and they don't have
power. I think they'd all be paid.
I think they'd all be paid.
Yeah, so that would be the proposal, right? Like yes. And in exchange for the time of these seven people, I don't know how the mechanism would work for electing the seven people. But that would be part of the original proposal as well.
I mean, you could and just, I'm just propose picking some seven people if they get voted in, it's fine, right? But then you'd give them the job to just create as many suggestions as they come up with and deem valuable, and everything you vote yes or no. It's basically like voting in Switzerland.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The existing infrastructure is already there. We just don't trust it because it's not transparent and it's been abused.
Yep.
Right. So people are trying to recreate shit. And I'm like, yo, just recreate the US government, man. but make it apparent, but make it transparent and you know what I mean? And blockchain transparent and blockchain accountable. And it would work so good.
And I mean, you have to, you probably need some more layers, but.
Oh, sure. And I'm thinking, you know, 40 years in the future, but you know what I'm saying?
Yes, of course. But I mean, the system, how it is in the US and in Switzerland, it's similar, is you have as much power as possible at the municipal level. If
there you
need
go.
To share the power, you put it on county level. If that's too small, you put it on state level, and only in the last possible instance, you put it on federal level.
There you go, right?
And that keeps the power to the edges if you do it right. The problem is that it's not in the edges anymore. But I think that's more a tooling problem. And again, keeping as not being trigger happy with putting rules into place.
Sure. And you know, that's the challenge of governance, right? It's not something that's the thing about Simon Sinek, right? Finite game, not it's an infinite game, not a finite
it's an infinite game.
That's what an argument I had recently with people, like, oh my God, society's crumbling and society's all, everything's going to hell in a handbasket. I had an argument. In real life, I work in construction, right? Mm-hmm. I'm an inspector in the construction game. And I was working with this young kid. This dude's about young 20s. Mm-hmm. And I'm in my 40s, right? Early 40s. And so this, in my opinion, this young man meant well, but hasn't seen a damn thing of life. and you know, no offense to my young friends out there, if there's any of you, but
I'm late 20s, so I kind of fit.
Yeah, and you're already starting. Honestly, I don't take people seriously till they hit about 27. But that's just my.
Ooh, own. That was a close call.
Yeah, it's my own sort of thing, right? Like if you're 25. I'll listen to you, but you know what I mean? Like you need to pay some taxes for a while, sir. and have some unemployment, some time sitting on the couch in unemployment and stuff. And I guess that's going on now. So you're starting to get it, but, not to insult people, but with this kid was like, everything's going to hell in a handbasket. He's 23. He had a university degree. And a full belly and blah, 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 blah. And that was before the pandemic. And he was already with such a negative attitude on how the world was going and stuff like that. And yeah, it's been super challenging, recently, but on the same hand, it's really a matter of perspective in the sense that, you haven't had the time in to really see where we've came from.
Yep.
Right. And the fact that there's a lot of static now, well, that static wasn't even allowed to exist in a little while ago. Yeah. And so I had to give him a little bit of a, are you sure you know what the hell you're talking about? You know what I mean? I guess I could go a couple different ways with,
I guess
with that conversation.
It's an effect that you create by, you know, you give a lot of education to young people. Mm-hmm. Before they can get a perspective. And I'm including myself absolutely into that.
Yeah.
Because what age gives you is enough time to look at time as a bigger picture, right?
Yeah. And then people like me end up using it as a gatekeeping thing. You know what I mean? Like, oh, get out of here. If a 24-year-old has a... Yeah, if a 24-year-old has a good idea, then someone like me might be like, "Murr," which is why, you know, open transparency in voting and stuff like that is really the way to go. You know, so if you hadn't thought about it, you know, the different systems of governance that we have, they're actually brilliant. They're just not functioning very well to our benefit at this time, or don't seem to be. But even then, we only count. We only count what we see. No one counts like the accidents that never happened. You know what I mean? Like, this is a good example too, with the virus going around. There's a lot of pushback in around my communities because there hasn't been a lot of, it feels like a very draconian, squeeze.
Yeah.
That didn't really need to be necessary given the, who knows, fatality of the virus or whatever metric, right? Which is true, but in a very limited sense, I think. But what about since we did go through all that draconian stuff, how much did we avoid that we don't know about?
Absolutely. And I mean, the corona pandemic is actually an accident that at least partially happens right now, right?
Yeah.
That really drove my nerves. I don't know when the pig flu thingy was in Europe. I don't know if it reached America. But there was
like a little bit.
That
swine flu, yeah.
Swine flu, yeah. And there was this, oh my God, things could go south really fast, right? From scientists.
Yeah.
And our government reacted with, okay, start washing your hands frequently. And if you don't have access to wash your hands, start sanitizing and, you know, prevent spreading like this and don't get close to pigs. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember the things back then
either. But there were measures put in place and I remember multiple people going like, oh, that's... We don't even have cases about that. Why do we have to go through using hand sanitizer now? That's completely rubbish. And then 1 year later, swine flu was gone, right? And they're like,
yeah.
See, it was completely useless.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there like, no, you don't know.
That's not how statistics work in real life. It could have
completely south if we didn't do that, and you will never know.
I heard an interesting story just last night from a guy that's in my, I have a mastermind group, and it's just four dudes or whatever, but just, it was just me and another guy yesterday. And he's an older gentleman, and he just come down with a case of the mumps. I was like, the mumps? What? Like, yeah. And he's like in his 60s and he got the mumps. And it's because he had some health problems and had some blood transfusions or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Related to like a cancer scare and or leukemia type scare. I don't know 100% about his medical history, but something to that effect. And it, and at the time, it therefore wiped out his shots that he got, his immunizations for, because it's like rubella, mumps, and measles or something like that, all in one.
The triple shot that you get,
Something like that. And they didn't want to give it to him right away because they were worried his new immune system was a little bit shaky at the time. Mm-hmm. So one of his brothers works in a hospital and came over for Thanksgiving, and they were pretty careful about it and stuff like that. But, you know, these guys work in hospitals and they should be clean and stuff like that. Well, he's the only one with an immune system that would be compromisable. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, he got mumps, right? And it's like, well, where does it even come from? Right. But it's still there. If you don't have your mumps shot, like my friend, and he just lives in Vancouver and just goes out, like he's not doing it. He just, you know, he's semi-retired. He's an Amazon seller. So he's out there buying product and selling it. And he got mumps, you know what I mean? And he's fine or whatever. But like, no, it's there. It exists. It's crawling around invisible on desktops somewhere. You know, if it came in from the hospital guy, it probably came in on his shoes.
Yeah.
You and know what I mean?
Those things hurt so much because it's just plain ignorance, right?
Yeah.
You could listen to your experts, but you decide that you're wiser than them.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I know better than all these. I didn't even know what an mRNA vaccine was until this pandemic.
But no, it gives me 5G. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it made me set a bunch of fires in my town. The interesting thing about – we're wrapping up this interview here, but the interesting thing I noticed about this interview is we managed to solve governance. You know, you now have a plan to administrate the Council of Seven onto Project Catalyst, and I look forward to your success as the first emperor.
I don't think we solved governance, but we might have solved a tiny little piece, and if we solved that...
Well, and you said the word values, and I hadn't put that word to it yet, and that makes more sense.
The values, I think that's the lowest hanging fruit that Cardano has at the moment.
Because I was saying the word constitution and stuff. Yeah, yeah. I was saying the word constitution. I was saying Declaration of Independence, and that's where I was getting the resistance, which is understandable, but I didn't know my way around it. Other than it's like, well, they're like traditions or they're like principles, guidelines. But an agreed document of values, I think, is something that multiple people that are already influential in the Catalyst community could get behind.
Yep.
And then once the proposal infrastructure is there, then a proposal could be made and funding could be put towards it to have a council of seven Swedish people or whatever, Swiss people.
And you know, the beautiful thing of values is you can't abuse them.
Yeah, no, they are what they are.
Yeah, because a law can be abused, right? You might be there's a law that you can, as a police official, stop a person. You can abuse that, but values can't be abused. You can just interpret them, and it's easy to prove if you're within a value or out of it. There's no harm in having them.
It gives us the foundations to start assessing intent.
Yep.
Right? Which I want to avoid the word judgment because, again, judges interpret rules and laws and stuff like that. And yet, at some point, you'll have to assess intent. For example, when Ken Adams thinks that a proposal is an obvious joke. You know what I mean? And it, all we have to do that now is say, oh, well, I know Ken Adams. Yeah, I thought it was a joke. He told me he thought it was a joke. We all agreed that this proposal is goofy.
I felt so bad when I heard about that. I looked at the proposal. It was absolutely terrible. But from the other perspective, it's just, you know, agreed upon that this kind of behavior is just not acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. So I don't know if you have any finishing statements. I know people could probably get a hold of you like the way I did over in Discord.
Yeah, I don't know if you have any.
I should put down, I'll write down your Discord name because it's not Renee.
No, it's at Unasini with a double N at the end.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. But I'm writing it down right now. So they can get a hold of you in Discord, you're a proposal mentor, you can help people with their proposals or help show them around. Certainly if they want to reach out to you in terms of how to get involved with being a community advisor or a better community advisor or anything like that. There's lots of people that can do that in the Discord. I can't think of anything else. Yeah, certainly. I can't think of anything else. So if that's all, thank you for being on the show, sir.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to me.
Awesome. All right. I will talk to you in a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, guys. That's the show. Make sure to check the links mentioned that are in the description, as well as our financial advice disclaimer. Stay tuned for the next episode, which I think is going to be with a Catalyst proposer and his idea for a physical machine that takes fiat directly to ADA and stakes it. Fiat to ADA staking in one step. Okay, thanks for listening. Stay pretty, and I'm out. Peace. Oh yeah, that super secret way to get rich on Doge. Yeah, nah, there was never any secret way to get rich on Doge. It was all lies. I was lying. I tricked you so hard into listening. You're still listening. Lies and deception.